Bom dia, boa tarde. Welcome to another episode of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. I'm your guest host, John Neves, back here again to talk about my favorite subject, your favorite subject, and that is, of course, Portuguese soccer, Portuguese football, whatever word you use in your part of the world. Episode 101. How are you? I hope you are all doing well. Special thank you very much to all those that reached out to me last week to congratulate me for 100 episode last week. I didn't actually talk about it or kind of acknowledge it simply because to me, I think 200 is a bit of a better milestone, or even 250. I think 100 is still too easy in my opinion. But again, for the many of those that I've made friends with, that I've met offline, thank you so much for that. And well, here we are back. We just finished the Taça de Portugal. We also just finished the last match that needed to be finished from week 16. And this weekend now we are going to be headed into week 18. Officially, the second half of the season begins. Then we take a little bit of a break next week in terms of the middle of the week. And then, of course, the following weekend, we have 19. And then attention will shift to the Taça da Liga, the League Cup competition. But let's get going first off with a quick preview of really last week, week 17. And obviously, the two results that I think stand out with regard to last week was obviously the big win by Santa Clara at home, beating Sporting. It is the second time this season that Santa Clara has beaten a big three at home. They, of course, beat Porto a while back to eliminate them from the Taça da Liga group play. And this time they managed to beat another big three at home, this time beating Sporting 3-2. It is Sporting's first loss in domestic competition. Ruben Amorim, of course, wasn't available to manage. He was in COVID isolation protocols. But a lot of credit to Santa Clara that day for doing what they did, and they're going to be looking to make more history pretty soon with regards to coming up with the League Cup, the Taça da Liga. But then, of course, we also saw a great match, of course, with everything that happened with Estoril and Porto. You remember everything leading up to the game. Estoril, a lot of cases, both with their staff and players. There was talk of under 23. There was talk of postponing. But at the end of the day, they did meet the minimum requirements, and they did play. And what a match it was. They jumped out to a 2-0 lead in early. But Porto is Porto, and they managed to come back to record the 3-2 win with Chico Conceição's son scoring the big goal toward the end. And as a result, they, of course, are headed to another win. Porto has not lost in Liga, something like 45 matches. That goes back to October 2020 when they lost away to Passos de Ferreira. I think a few weeks before that, they also, if I recall, lost to Marítimo at home. But since then, overall, going back to the end of October 2020, Porto has just been on fire and tremendous Liga form. Benfica beat Passos de Ferreira in a match that Passos and their manager, Cesar Peixoto, did not like. A lot of unhappiness with the referees. But Benfica, as they begin the Veríssimo era, with a very, very big win, 2-0 at home. Surprise result, Braga 2-2 with Família Cong, which has really been playing very well. We saw Bissad beat Arouca 2-1. Gil Vicente, which right now is sitting as the fifth-place team in the Liga, with a very big win in a bit of a rivalry match between two teams up north. Gil Vicente beating Vitória Guimarães 3-2. Scenes in the Barcelos Stadium with, after the match, Ricardo Quaresma going to acknowledge the fans and, as they say in Portugal, show his face after the disappointing loss. And if you saw the video, check it out on PortugueseSoccer.com Twitter. Basically, fans irate. You know, it almost looked like they wanted to attack Ricardo Quaresma. But Quaresma, you know, obviously he's grown up in Portugal. He knows You know, he would not have gone over there, I think, if he felt that something physical could have happened. I think someone on Twitter had replied saying, you know, he grew up in that culture, he understands it, and he went to show his face, and I think the fans would appreciate it. Though, of course, those looked like very upset Vitória Guimarães fans. They actually say in Portugal, I've heard this, I don't know if it's true, that the Vitória Guimarães fans are some of the most hardcore fans in Portugal. And I will tell you by looking at that video, that looked pretty obvious. Boa Vista Tondela 1-1. We saw Vizela losing to Moreirense. So that was an interesting result. That was Ricardo Sapinto's win in his first match with Moreirense. Still a lot of work to do for Ricardo Sapinto. But that was a very good result to get him started there with the era at Moreirense. And then another good match we saw that I think is a bit of an upset, Portimonense. Maybe they were looking ahead to the Taça de Portugal match. They lost to Marítimo at home 2-1. Marítimo, with the exception of that Benfica loss a few weeks ago, that very ugly, what was it, 6-1 loss in the Luge. Other than that, Vasco Seabra and Marítimo have been playing really well. Really, really very, very well. And that pretty much wraps up the first half of the season, which actually became official earlier tonight. Familia Cong defeated Bissad in a match that was postponed from week 16. They finished it tonight. And as a result, Familia Cong gets the win. We still got some teams at the bottom. Bissad, Belenenses-Sad at the bottom with 11. Arouca with 14. Moreirense with 15. Familia Cong with 15. And then Santa Clara with 16. Tondela 16 and Vizela 16. So I'll tell you, there is not a big difference between 10th place Boavista with 17 points and Bissad in last place with 11 points. You all it really takes is 2 to 3 wins, and you pretty much go from the bottom to the middle of the pack. You know, they say in Portugal, 34, 35 points is what you really need to make sure that you avoid the drop. You know, it's kind of what the smaller clubs are playing for, to get the 34, 35 points. And a lot of these teams right now, a lot of them are not even halfway there, so there is a lot of work to do. But I do want to say one thing that is very special about this time with Portuguese soccer, Portuguese football, and that is, you know, when you look at the Taça de Portugal with second division Mafra and Tondela, they'll be playing each other in the two leg semifinals. So one of them is going to be playing in the final, and that will be a first time for each of these clubs. They will be making history. So we are going to have one of the clubs outside the Big Three and Braga playing. The last time we had somebody outside the Big Three and Braga playing was back in 2018. Desportivo do Aves defeated Sporting. You probably remember that match. That was a few weeks after the Alcochete attacks. And Desportivo do Aves was just tremendous. And they won that match, beating JJ and Sporting 2-1. In a match that was played in the Jamor. I think that might have been, I have to check. Because they played the following year in the Jamor, but since then there hasn't been a lot of cup finals in the Jamor. So, and Desportivo do Aves won. And the other time, we didn't have a Sporting Braga or Benfica or Porto playing in the Taça final was also way back. I'm looking here at the chart. Was way back in 2017 when Benfica beat Guimarães with Rui Vitória. So that was the other time. That was, 6 years ago when somebody outside the Big Three in Braga didn't make it, was playing in the final, and that was Guimarães. So this year we are going to have a smaller club playing in the Taça de Portugal final. And obviously, we've got, of course, a Sporting Porto Two Lakes semifinal. They're already going to be playing each other pretty soon for the Liga, and now they're going to be playing each other first leg early March, second leg third week of April. So we've got ourselves a pretty big match coming up, so it works out very well for the Portuguese Liga. But we have a very special time, though. Mafra, second division, Tondela toward the bottom, competing One of them is going to be playing in the final. You look at the Taça da Liga, the League Cup competition. You know, you've got Santa Clara and Boa Vista that are both playing in it. You've got Benfica playing Boa Vista. You got Sporting playing Santa Clara. So we've got four small Portuguese teams competing for two different major competitions. And, you know, the last few years, the Taça da Liga, if you look at it year by year, it's been mostly the big three in Braga. So, and I think this is very important because I think sometimes, and look, it is what it is. The big three get most of the attention. Braga gets their fair amount of attention. Sometimes Guimarães will get some attention if they wind up having a great season. But ultimately, this is a league that's very top heavy. You could see it in the standings. I mean, when you look at the standings, you've got Porto with 47. If you go through right through, let's say, Portimonense with 24, everybody after that, you know, is toward the bottom. So this is a so to see four teams kind of break the stranglehold of the big clubs, not necessarily being all the teams that are left, is, I think, a fantastic accomplishment because, you know, if you're a club like Santa Clara battling relegation, if you're a club like Boa Vista that's trying to stay in the middle of the pack and avoid the drop, now you get to play for a trophy. And we've seen a lot of times in these competitions where, you know, during the regular season, you know, in the Liga, they may get beat up pretty badly by a big team, but there's something about a cup final or a semifinal where it's almost even, you know, and these teams do have a shot. So, and then, of course, you know, you look at a Mafra second division and a Tundela. One of them is going to be playing in the final. They're going to have a great two legs. It's obviously not going to get as much attention as Sporting Porto, but when one of them does make it to the final, that's going to be a big deal because they're going to be playing one of the Portuguese giants. They're going to be making history just by playing in the Taça de Portugal final. And, you know, as we've seen, whenever one of these big clubs win a Taça de Liga or they win a Taça de Portugal, you know, I remember when Moreirense won, you know, the Taça de Liga a few years ago, it was a big deal to that part of Portugal and to that very small club. You know, they went from still being a small club, but they're a little bit bigger now, and they've actually got a big trophy that they can, you know, showcase. It was the same thing before with Desportivo do Aves when they won the Taça de Portugal a few years ago. You know, they won a big trophy until they unfortunately ran into some issues and dropped out of the first division. But that was it was just a fun day. And so we've got it. So I think, you know, while there are some big clubs that are left, of course, we should also be very appreciative and exciting that we've got some of these smaller teams that are still playing and are still going to be competing for a trophy. And I think that's, you know, very, very exciting times. We go, of course, to week 18 this weekend as we begin the second half of the season. Pretty interesting matchups. Vizela, Sporting. Vizela, of course, coming off the Taça loss this week to Porto. Sporting coming off of the very big win against the fourth division club, Leça. You've got pretty much Benfica playing Moreirense at home. Can Ricardo Sapinto light a fire under his team to try to beat Benfica and Verissimo, who is still trying to figure things out with their team? Porto is going to be going to the Jamor to play Belenenses side, B side. I think Porto is the overwhelming favorite there, but that's a pretty interesting match. You've got, you know, when I look at this right now, kind of scrolling through it, you got Braga playing Marítimo. Braga, you know, just not playing. They could be doing a lot better. I've talked about this already. They could be doing a lot better. But now they're playing a Marítimo team, which, like I said, with the exception of the loss to Benfica, has really put together some great results. So that is a very, very good match this weekend. And this weekend, you've got essentially four matches Saturday. You've got four matches on Sunday, and then, of course, on Monday, you'll have one match with Portimonense playing Guimarães. Second straight Monday that Guimarães will be finishing off the Liga week. So some pretty interesting. I'm always curious how they do the scheduling and who they decide, you know, to play last, especially since Guimarães played last week at Gil Vicente, but obviously they have to agree to it to play. Second division report, man, what an interesting story this week. the other day, Feirense from Algarve, made the trip up north to go to Varzim to play a match that had been postponed previously because of COVID. They pull into the stadium, you know, where the with Varzim plays, at about 2:15 in the afternoon, 14:15, and they discover that the local health delegate has called the match because basically Varzim just doesn't have enough players. I think they had something like 9 players and they couldn't play that match. And obviously there was some people not very happy that you're... And by the way, Faru to Varzim is... that's a pretty long trip. I'm going to take a guess. That's probably at least 4 hours. I'm not sure if they did a staju there in the Varzim area or if they just drove up that morning to play the match. I think a lot of the second division clubs save money by doing the trip on the day of the game unless they're really going far, and let's say it's a 5-hour trip. But really interesting situation that they get to the stadium and they find out an hour and 15 minutes before kickoff that the match was postponed. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And, you know, last week, week 17, obviously the big match last week was the second division Clásico with Benfica B and FC Porto B. FC Porto B with a goal in the third minute of stoppage time, and they walked away with the 2-1 win. What the first team squad did at Estoril, they pretty much wound up doing it at Seychelles. Benfica B has not been the same team since Nelson, since Verissimo left to go take over the first team. And as a result, even though they are level with Casapia with 33 points, Casapia, though, is in first by goal, I think, because they beat Benfica B earlier this season. But I got to tell you, man, this, I know a lot of people don't pay attention to the second division, but Casapia, Benfica, 33. Feirense from the Feira, 32. Nacional, 29. Rio Ave, FC Porto B, 27. FC Porto B is beginning to climb. Chaves, 26. And then Estrela Amadora with 25. So you essentially have 8 teams battling for first place or essentially 2 matches away from a win from getting into the competition. Again, Benfica B, FC Porto B are just playing to win a second division trophy. But there are the other 6 teams that are near the top that are really in a position. And the goal is to finish top 3. You know, you do top 2, you automatically come up. You finish in third, then you go into a playoff with the 16th place team in the first division. But the second division... A lot of credit to the clubs. They're very, very competitive. And Chaves last week didn't play. I believe their match was postponed. I can't remember if it was because of COVID. They've also been doing well, and they've been getting into the hunt. They were in the first division for a few years as well. So they are pretty much in the hunt as well. And then you look down at the bottom, Académica and Varzim with 8 points each. Feirense from the Algarve with 14. So... a lot of work to do with those teams. I think right now, bottom 2 drop. And right now, unless something changes, Varzim and Académica. I mean, Académica from Coimbra. It's a big city in Portugal, obviously a big university city. They were in, I think, the first division maybe 3-4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago. Académica is a big club or has a history in Portuguese football, and look at them, last place along with Varzim. So some really changing things that have been going on there, you know, with regards to they just something's going wrong with Académica. So we'll see if they'll be able to come back. Let's do my picks, and let me start off first by saying that, last week I was 2-2, okay? I predicted Benfica would beat Passos de Ferreira, and that's exactly what happened. I predicted that Porto would beat Estoril, and for a while there, it looks like it was going to be a bad choice, but Porto came back and defeated Estoril 3-2. I then predicted that Braga would beat Família Cão, and again, if there's been one team that has hurt me with the picks all season, it's been Braga. I put a lot of faith into them. I always, you know, that's been my thing with Braga this year. You know, even though right now they are in fourth place and they're kind of comfortable in fourth place, that's just what Braga is. They're just a fourth place team. because, you know, they managed to win enough to stay in fourth and keep everybody away that's at the bottom of them, but they just don't maybe make it easy for them to ever compete with the top. So fourth place Braga, I mean, it just kind of fits. I mean, that's just the way it is. But they suffered a draw at home to Familiar Kong. I predicted that Braga would win. And then in the second division, I predicted a draw between the second division Clásico between Benfica B and FC Porto B. And let me tell you, for 92 minutes, it looked good. It looked like I was going to go out 3-1. But, of course, the late goal by Porto, I think it was Borges that scored. And as a result, I finished 2-2, which is, I think I finished with a record of like 2-2 now. I think probably six of the last 8 weeks I've been 2-2. So I'm still stuck at 59% right. Someone in Vegas and Macau would say those are still not bad odds. But I'm a long ways away from my goal of 75%. And now I'm just, I'm like one of these smaller Portuguese clubs that's at the bottom. I'm just trying to gather points to try to avoid it getting worse. You know, I mean, that's really all I'm doing. But this week, let's get going this week with the picks. Basically, Vizela Sporting, no doubt Sporting is going to win. I just don't see Vizela. Sporting reacted very well, winning against the fourth division team, Leça, after losing last week at Santa Clara. They've got a number of their players back from COVID, including, of course, Ruben Amorim. They are 3 points behind Porto. And don't think that doesn't bother them after they spent a good portion of the season tied in first, and as well as most of last season. But I'm going to predict that Sporting will win. I'm going to say 3-0. Bissad Porto, I don't have to give much thought to this. It would be a major upset if somehow Porto loses. But when you look at the way Porto played against Estoril, you look at how they played against Vizela in the Cup, If I were to be wrong on this, it would be a major upset. So I'm predicting also a 3-0 win for Porto. Benfica will be playing at home against Moreirense and Ricardo Sapinto. Verissimo doing his touches with the team, but I'm predicting that Benfica will win 2-0. And then my second division match, I'm going to predict that Penafiel, which hasn't won their last five matches at home, and Vila Franquense has been doing pretty well lately, I'm going to predict Benfica 2, Vila Franquense 2. So I'm going to predict Sporting to win, Porto to win, Benfica to win. And then in the second division, I'm predicting that Benfica and Vila Franquense will finish in a 2-2 draw. Part two of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. Welcome back. And let me just say, I don't think I say it enough. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. And thank you for listening to what I have to say about Portuguese soccer, Portuguese football. Again, trying to be objective, talking about it from my mind and not from my heart. And it's up to you to decide if that is the case. But this is my fast and furious section. And I'm going to be talking about a lot of different topics, things that happened basically the past week in Portuguese football in Portugal, and wanted to give you some of my thoughts on it. First off, again, we are halfway through the season, and I had some Porto fans DM me, including my cousins in France. If you listen to this, you know I've got a bunch of cousins in France, and most of them are Porto fans because, of course, they're all from up north, Arcos do Valdevez. And they basically posed a question after Sporting loss last week is, you know, do I still think Sporting is the best team in Portugal? And I told them, well, when it comes to the Liga, obviously the standing speaks for itself. Porto, fantastic form in the Liga. Haven't lost again in something like 45 matches in the Liga going back to October 2020. And just when you think they're down, as was the case last week at Estoril, they come back and pull out the win. And that's Porto a lot. Even during, I remember, the Vilas Boas years, during Vitor Pereira's years, Josvaldo Ferreira, Porto always found a way late in the game, late in the match, to score that winning goal. They just always had that knack. Falcão used to score these amazing goals. Hulk, I can't tell you how many times. And the DNA of Porto, the way they battle back, I think, is the reason why they are in first place. Now, Do I think they are the best team overall in Portugal? No, I still don't. I'm not ready yet. And here's why. Listen. First off, they're still involved in four competitions. They're still competing in the Champions League. And I think that counts for something. Porto went from the Champions League to the Europa playoff. They were eliminated from the Taça da Liga, a competition that they have yet to win. And I don't care what anybody tells you who's a Porto fan or Porto. If they downplay it, it's because they don't really have anything else to say. It's really a very empty thing that's missing in their museum. But Porto, generally speaking, in Portugal, and again, we're talking about Portugal, which means we're talking about all the domestic competitions in Portugal. I think that's why, for now, I think Sporting is the best team in Portugal right now. Now, I said last week that I was waiting for Sporting to respond to some adversity, which, you know, when you think about losing to Santa Clara, that is adversity. They came back against Leicester, but let's not get too excited. It was a fourth division team that couldn't even, that wasn't even playing in their own stadium. They were essentially renting the stadium at Passos. So we'll be curious to see if Sporting will continue to be the best team in Portugal, because they are going to be tested. They've got the Taça da Liga at the end of this month, where they'll try to defend their, you know, they won it last year. And then not to mention the fact that they're going to be playing Porto in a few weeks, and they're going to have to be going up north. And then, of course, they have to deal with the Champions League. And, you know, I said back in the fall, another reason why I think Sporting is the best team in the league is I wondered how they would do with all the young players dealing with playing Champions League and then dealing with the Liga on weekends. And they passed the test. Say whatever you want, disagree whatever you want. I just don't think you can argue. But in terms of all fronts, Sporting's been the best team in the Liga, and they're only 3 points out of first place. So that's just my opinion, and I think that's an important thing to say. And when we talk about being where we are in the midpoint of the seasons, all the newspapers like to talk about, they like to say that Porto is the champion of the first half of the season, which doesn't really mean anything. But, we could also say so far, who do we think? To me, the best manager so far in the Liga. Now we're going to kind of shift and talk about the Liga since we finished 17 matches. I think based on what's happened in the Liga, no doubt it's Conceição, especially since he hasn't lost in the Liga in such a long time. The best player, in my opinion, in the Liga has been Luis Diaz. He's been that way since day one of the season. Benfica fans might argue maybe a Rafa. Obviously, there's other players around the league that are, doing very well. But to me, I think those are the two people that really stand out, in my opinion, when you talk about, who to honor as we enter through the midway of the season. And as I keep going here in the Fastest Furious section, I want to start with talking about Porto. They lost Sergio Oliveira on loan. I said back during the summer that I was surprised that he hadn't left Porto, and he hasn't played. I mean, he's played, but certainly not a lot of what you would expect a player. And that goes back to my belief that players have a timeline that they're expected to play for a club, and then at a certain point when they reach a peak, that's when the clubs are going to sell them. And when I think that didn't happen with Sergio Oliveira, I think he might have been briefly injured. He had a good season, but he certainly didn't play as much as he did last year. Or at least it doesn't feel that way. But losing him this week and losing Corona, which did not make Sergio Conceição very happy, and why should it be? Because you're essentially losing two pieces. Now, neither player has played a whole, they've played again. They've played, but not every single minute, in terms of being, absolutely a regular 11 player that's going to be picked. But losing both of these players, I think, is a very tough thing, and Conceição even said so. But I think Porto, because of the fact that they didn't qualify for the Champions League, they don't want to lose Corona on a free. I mean, if they're going to be picking up, if reports are true, 3 million, I mean, it's not a bad deal. 3 million is not a bad deal if you can get that for a player that you're going to be losing coming up in 6 months, and you have nothing for him. And Porto, as we know, has lost a few players on a free the last few years. And in Portuguese football, like I have said so many times, you have to get a certain dividend out of all your players. You have to get a certain amount of money based on when you buy them and then you sell them. You want to make a big profit because the money in the transfer market is such a big part of the budgets of the teams. I'm sorry. We're very fortunate where I live in my part of the world where I can watch RTP International once a week to see a game. And I've got Gold TV, the great people they are, and the tremendous job Nino does, broadcasting the games. But generally speaking, in Portugal, and I think this is the case still with Canada, there are a lot of places around the world where Portugal doesn't have their TV games being shown. And as a result, the TV money is not as great. It's just not as great. And as a result, it's not like they're going to make a lot of money selling kits. Because selling kits for 100 euros is not something many people could afford in Portugal. I know I wouldn't buy a kit. I don't care who it is for 100 euros. I've never bought anything like that expensive. But that's me. I'm not judging you. I'm saying that's just me. I say the same thing with other sports. But the point is when you're a Portuguese club, you have to sell your players and you have to get money out of them. You can't just let them walk away. And I think that's the move they're making here, where they know Corona's going to be leaving in June, so let's just get the 3 million now. And Sergio Oliveira, even though he renewed, I think it was a year or two ago, the reality of the matter is he's graduated, where it's time for him to move on to bigger and better things. And again, there's not many players that are going to spend their entire careers in Portugal. Some of them are going to taste what it's like to play abroad. Some of them don't do very well, and then they come back to Portugal and they play. But Sergio Oliveira is going to be moving on. But this is a very tough two moves. Look, there are a lot of young players. Chico, will he be loaned? There was some interest from Italy. Evan Nielsen just seems to be banging them in the Taça de Portugal. Pepe, the kid from Brazil, Grêmio, is he going to basically step up? Luis Diaz is still here. I don't see them selling him. But you know what? Like I said last week, if they do sell Luis Diaz, then there's really something going on behind the scenes, because I don't see Liverpool triggering the buyout clause. But at the same time, if they make a good enough offer and Porto takes it, I think that speaks volumes. Volumes! To what's going on with Porto behind the scenes financially, if they're going to sell what I think is really the MVP of the Liga right now. Switching to Benfica, Rui Costa gave an interview. I always feel like Rui Costa likes to give interviews to the BTV, but sometimes when he talks to the press, I know he's got some criticism because he doesn't take questions. He sort of still has that player mentality when he was a player, and he was a great player, as you know. But back in the day, the players were protected from the press, and they'd walk very quick through the mix zone. And I think when you're president, I think you need to be talking every day, at least in my opinion. Or if not, maybe not every day, but you got to be talking every other day and taking questions, the tough questions. But he said something very interesting this week, and that JJ, Jorge Jesus, basically, the last straw for him, the thing that really brought him down, it was when JJ and Peasy had a disagreement, and it looks like the squad sided with Peasy. And, I personally, for me, think that when there is a situation and the players are the ones that are running the show and do whatever they did to show their loyalty to Peasy and put JJ in the position where he didn't have the conditions to continue as manager, I find that very dangerous. There are not a lot of teams, okay, that basically win when it's the players that are in control. You still need a very smart manager that's going to make the tough decisions of playing the best, the best 11 that are available that week, as opposed to the players wanting to, who they think are the best 11. But that was very interesting news when I heard that. And, Rui Costa saying something that, to be honest, Luis Vieira used to say, too, about, spending less time on signings and more time on the youth. When Benfica sold João Félix a few years ago for all that money, that was really the talk from Luis Vieira about how, there's going to be a few more coming. Maybe not 120 million, but certainly a lot of money. When he hired Bruno Lage after, Bruno Lage got off to a great start, I remember Bruno, Luis Oliveira, I remember an interview said, well, you know, if we got great players in the Seychelles, why can't we also have great managers? But, you know, the only problem with that way of thinking is they tried that with Rui Vitória is, if this team is 13, 14, 15 points behind in March, they're not going to be going to the Seychelles to find their solutions. They're going to be looking at the transfer market to bring in some new players because I can't imagine a manager coming in to a team like Benfica and basically being treated to youth players, or maybe not youth players, but certainly players young enough, you know, as opposed to maybe getting players with some experience. But he did admit that they would be a combination of youth and veteran talent. But you also saw that he really wants the youngsters to get more playing time. But, you know, I guess what I'm saying is it depends which way the wind is blowing. If you're losing and dropping points, then it's very easy to go out and sign very good players to solve your problem. But when you're winning, you know, you can obviously say that you're going to use the young players. But the problem is will the young players, who, by the way, never stick around if they're good enough, but are the young players good enough to help the team compete for a championship? And, when you look at Porto, you know, Luis Diaz, you look at all their, veteran leadership in the midfield. You know, Tereme is, he's been in Portugal for a number of years. Marchesin, played for a number of years in Mexico. There's a lot of experience there. Diego Costa now is going on, second full year of playing. Porto doesn't do what they do, unless they have a lot of veterans. And so I'm very curious to see what Benfica is going to be doing in the future. But I'm afraid to say, in my objective opinion, that I think what I heard was a lot of what we've heard from the past president. And again, I think it depends which way the wind is blowing. If you're dropping points, they're going to be talking about this summer's transfer window. You're winning, it's very easy to say you're going to go with the youth, and we'll see. But they said they're going to go with a mix, but we'll see. But at the end of the day, to me, whether you go with the young, whether you go with the old, whether you go with the both, at the end of the day, you got to win, and you have to figure out a way to beat Porto and Sporting. And lately, we've seen, which also contributed to JJ's downfall, is that Benfica right now just hasn't been ready to beat them. And the players that sided with PZ, they got to figure it out too, because they're the ones that are on the pitch playing, all 90 minutes. And by the way, JJ, there have been some reports with Atlético Mineiro of Brazil. At least when I'm dropping this episode, I don't think that's going to happen. If I'm JJ, stay out of sight for the next few months. Take a breather. When you're a manager, go see some family. Maybe go visit, go to Disney World. Go take a vacation with the family. And I think what I hope of JJ, because he is, I realize that Benfica fans don't like him now based on the results. But I think we would all agree that if you look at his Wikipedia page and you see everything that he has done, he does deserve, in my opinion, it's time for JJ to start managing abroad. And I'm not talking about South America or the Middle East. I don't see any reason why he wouldn't have a shot, not necessarily at one of the giants in the EPL, but if you're one of the not big name clubs in the EPL, why wouldn't you take a chance on a JJ? If you're La Liga, who he's very familiar with, why wouldn't you take a chance on a JJ? Same thing maybe in Italy. I hope for JJ's thing that, he kind of gets, mentioned for some of these jobs and maybe he gets it, because if Portugal does not qualify for the playoffs in March for the World Cup, the best available manager, and they won't hire anybody away, will probably be JJ. And a lot of people, you're going to probably laugh, oh my God, that's a worse choice. But, let's remember, Fernando Santos came from managing Greece. I mean, a lot of people at the time thought it was the best available choice. So, but I hope JJ gets a big opportunity. I really do. And he's not managing your team anymore, so you shouldn't really be upset at him. But it is time for the guy to get a bigger opportunity. Sporting, again, tough loss to Santa Clara. I think if it was João Palhinha that said, eventually this was going to happen. But they did come back against Leça, but I'm not yet ready to say it's a big comeback, a big, as they like to say in Portugal, how are they going to respond? Be very curious to see what they do these next few matches. Vizela looked like a very tough opponent against Porto. Sporting should win. But, what happens if they draw, and again, Sporting last year didn't deal with any adversity until like April, and they managed to hold on to win because they had a 10-point lead. If they drop any points in the next few weeks, even if it's just a draw, how are they going to handle it in January? And I'm very curious to see that. I still think they're the best team based on their body of work through today. But I'll tell you right now, they're going to be tested these next few weeks. Ricardo Esgayu, awful performance by the press, and he got really hit hard. But as Portuguese clubs are meant to do, they basically will come to the player's support. Because after all, he is a human being, and you have one bad game, you just have one bad game. But this guy, the players came back and they came to support him. And again, all it takes is a few wins, and everybody forgets about things. Fabio Cardoso didn't have the greatest start. I think if you remember when he was managed, when he first minutes of the season in the Champions League against Liverpool, when Pep got hurt or wasn't ready in pre-match, he got thrown into the fire, and a lot of people were kind of like shaking their heads at that move. But look at him now; he's done a great job for them. So my point is shouldn't judge somebody on one match. Let's give the kids some more time to try to turn it around. And thankfully, he's playing for a club such as Ruben Amorim that could turn it around. But the media was pretty brutal with him. And one will say that that's just the life of a footballer when you play for a big club in Portugal, because in fact, you did lose. But we'll see what happens with him as we move forward. Two more things to quickly talk about before I wrap up episode 101. Cristiano Ronaldo. A lot of people questioning whether or not this is working out at Manchester. Bottom line is players are basically valued depending on their results. And, Cristiano gave an interview to Sky Sports where he talked about, not understanding the mentality of the players, doesn't think they work hard enough. I don't think anybody works as hard as Cristiano, so I don't think that's very fair to the Manchester United players. But certainly the players are not working perhaps on the pitch as hard. Maybe they work... They don't work as hard as Cristiano in the gym, but they're certainly not working as hard on the pitch. So I'll tell you one thing that I said when people were criticizing Cristiano at Juventus, even though he did very well. Juventus did not get the team results that they wanted in terms of winning a Champions League. It just tells you what a great team and the support system he had at Real Madrid all those years for him. I think as much as he's a special player, you also need, you need the team around you to be well, to put you in the position to be successful. And he is getting a bit older. I don't know how many times he's going to be able to rescue Portugal and Manchester United. I mean, he can still do it, but the reality is if they're going to reach their team objectives, don't put it all on Cristiano. With all the money they spent on salaries over there, Bruno Fernandes has done great, but it feels like before Cristiano got there, he was doing a lot better. If you disagree with me, let me know. But that's just how I feel. And again, when we talk about the national team, it's just Bruno's just not the same. Again, my opinion, but certainly some things I've read have kind of show that to be the case. I'm going to wrap it up here now. Well, let me first talk, like I always do, about... People ask me all the time who my favorite club is in Portugal, and if you're a regular follower, it's Atlético dos Arcos. The team in the districts, I want to be able to say that I saw a team go from the bottom to at least the second division, because there's no way they have the resources to ever be in the first division, no way. Last week, though, disappointing 2-0 home loss, too, to Valenciano, but Valenciano right now takes over. They're in the what they call the promotion group of Viana do Castelo. And they are tied with Valenciano with 6 points, but obviously Valenciano has the 2-0 win hanging over them to basically have the tiebreaker. But this weekend, Arcos will be looking to turn it around against Cardiff Lens. I probably did not say that right. I'm sorry. But that was a team that was in with them in the previous group that eventually came up to this promotion group with Arcos, so they kind of know each other. And again, 3 points. Only first place in the 10 teams in this group gets the chance to go up. Second place team earns a spot in next year's Taça de Portugal. So obviously, at the very least, you want to finish top second. I don't want top second. I want to finish first. So let's hope the boys bounce back this upcoming weekend. Folks, this has been episode 101. Again, thank you for all your support. Thank you for listening. every week to come here and to tell you what I think. And I think that's a very important word here, what I think, and to tell you when it's good and to tell you when it's bad. And I just did that. And that'll wrap up episode 101. Folks, please stay safe, and I'll talk to you next time. Ciao, everybody.